Today on Straight Talk Africa, U.S. elections are less than a week away. The race for the White House between Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton and Republican flag bearer Donald Trump is too close to call. The next occupant of the White House needs the magic number of 270 electoral votes. A discussion and analysis of the presidential electoral process is next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the U.S. presidential electoral process.
Well, we have an exciting hour ahead coming up later in our STA inbox. We'll share your thoughts on what you think about the election process. We'll do it through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
Election Day in the U.S. is conducted differently from many other countries. For example, each of the 50 states runs Election Day by its own set of rules. VOA's Jeffrey Young explains.
Early voting in some U.S. states has begun. This year, Election Day is officially November 8th. In each of the 50 states and in the District of Columbia, there are political offices to fill, ballot questions to resolve, and just like 4 years ago, the choice to make of whom to send to the White House. The United States Constitution is filled with rights and protections for citizens, but voting is not necessarily one of them. As Georgetown University professor Mark Rome points out,
One would think that the right to vote is just as much an essential right of citizenship as the ability to speak freely or to worship freely, to petition the government and so forth. But it's not. The voting requirements are typically established by the states, and the states more or less can use their own standards.
The minimum voting age of 18 is set by U.S. federal law, but Rome says otherwise there is very little uniformity.
And so there is a patchwork of 50 different states with 50 different state laws about the time for voting, the processes for registering to vote, the places where you can vote, how you can vote by absentee ballot. All those details of the elections are established by state law, not by federal law.
The absentee ballots that Rome refers to are used by people who are away from home on Election Day, in the military, for instance, or traveling, or away at school. In recent years, something called early voting has also developed. Some two-thirds of the states now allow people to cast their ballots as much as a month or more before the official election day in November. A number of states have also passed laws requiring voters to produce specific photo IDs at their polling place to prove their identities. Advocates of these laws say they are necessary to prevent fraud. Opponents say such fraud is too statistically small to be a problem, and charge the laws are meant to suppress voting. And there's another way that a U.S. presidential election is really some 50 separate contests. According to the Constitution, people voting for president are actually selecting 538 people called electors on a state-by-state basis. And it's these people who officially determine who becomes president. American University professor Curtis Gans.
Those electors are the in number the congressional delegation in each state, two for the Senate and however many representatives, and they are elected by winner-take-all vote in the states.
George Mason University professor Dennis Johnson.
The most important number is 270, and that's the number of electors that will get you over the top. And any combination of states that has 270, that's the magic number that you're really looking for.
And while most presidential elections have one candidate winning both the majority of the popular vote and the Electoral College, an exception took place in 2000. Democrat Al Gore won the national popular vote by more than 500,000 ballots and had clear control of 266 Electoral College votes. But his challenger, Republican George W. Bush, led by a tiny fraction in the state of Florida. Gore demanded a partial recount, which Bush challenged all the way to the Supreme Court. More than a month after the election, the court sided with Bush, effectively awarding him Florida's 25 electoral votes and the White House. Johnson says the Electoral College is why candidates spend most of their time in a handful of so-called battleground states, the ones they believe will give them that winning total of 270 electoral votes. Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
Thanks, Jeffrey, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Kamisa Kamara, Senior Program Officer for the National Endowment for Democracy, based here in Washington, D.C. And my colleague, Jim Malone, VOA's National Correspondent. Well, I have to say, Kamisa and Jim, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you, Kamisa, immediately. You obviously have been following the electoral process. Are you surprised by the fact that, at least according to major polls, the race for the presidency seems to be tightening up?
I think that it's always a thing that right before the elections actually take place, people might change their minds and might actually say something else during the polls. And that whatever they're saying is might be different from what they're actually doing when they're in the voting booth. So I'm not too surprised that the polls are actually tightening up. I think it also attests to the fact that the U.S. is a vibrant democracy and that citizens are actually the ones who make the decision as to who is going to be elected president.
A vibrant democracy indeed, but we do have, obviously, one major presidential candidate, Republican flag bearer, Mr. Trump, who basically is alleging that the process is rigged.
Yes, and actually most U.S. election observers that I know laugh when they hear that, because the United States might be one of this very unique country where the citizens, the people, or even the people outside of the United States really trust the integrity of the elections. So whatever Mr. Trump or his partisans might be saying, I do not believe any word of that.
Now, Jim, you obviously, not only have you been following this particular election, but you have covered very many elections before. Any particular reason why this time around, one of the candidates, frankly, is alleging about a rigged election, a rigged process?
It's unusual. We saw that in the debate where Donald Trump was asked, will you accept the results? And basically said, it depends. I think it gave some folks pause about the precedence in our democracy, where historically, even if you go back to that very divisive election in 2000, where Al Gore lost very narrowly because of a few hundred votes in Florida, there were no riots in the streets. The tanks did not come out into the streets of Washington. Eventually, the Supreme Court ruled there'd be no further recounts, and that effectively made George W. Bush the president, and people went on. And Gore set a sort of precedent of graceful acceptance when he spoke in December of that year. Like a number of other things that Mr. Trump has done, it's raised some questions and shown that he is a different type of candidate. How much this is weighing on the voters' minds? Well, it seems like it is going to be weighing somewhat, but will it be enough to tilt the race one way or the other? I think we'll have to wait now till Election Day.
What about those who may ask you as to whether, in fact, this particular election, when you look at the playing field, to what extent is the political playing field leveled?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we pointed out in the initial piece here that we showed was that it's very hard to rig the election in one sense, because unlike so many other countries, the United States does not run the elections through the central government. It historically started with the states. Why? Think about it. The United States, we were 13 colonies that came together to form a country. Mm-hmm. We were colonies slash states before we were a country. So the importance of states' rights, of states controlling certain processes, is well documented in the United States. And therefore, just the very practicality of that makes it very difficult to try to rig anything. And we've had very few, relatively few instances of fraudulent ballots or rigged elections in our history.
Why is this particular election day a little bit late in November, someone might ask?
Well, it's traditionally, by law, the first Tuesday after the first Monday. So we're just getting a situation in November where this is about the latest it could be. And this was done historically. A lot of it was in keeping with trying to make sure farmers could vote, what day they could get to market. That's why they chose early November, as the date was after the harvest and before the winter made it travel difficult. So there's a lot of things in our election traditions that go way back. Some of it need explaining, like the Electoral College, the fact that we'll do not elect by popular vote, but by the state-by-state electoral votes.
You know, there is a common misconception, really, that Election Day in the U.S. is the first Tuesday of November. But talk to us about this key event in the history of this country, 1845, when a law passed by Congress saying that Election Day is the Tuesday following the first Monday in November.
Right. I mean, I think as I indicated, back then, you're talking about a very rural society. Travel was difficult. So you had to give people time to get to a polling location. I mean, how different is that today? Mm-hmm. For example, in my case, I live in Maryland. I've already voted. I voted early ballot absentee, mailed in my ballot. 37 of the 50 states allow early voting now. There's been a real push over the decades to make voting easier for Americans. We should point out, though, that how many people vote in presidential elections? On average, if it's a good year, 60% of registered voters. It's not a great number, especially compared with other countries around the world in some cases. So there's a push on one hand to expand voting, but you've seen in some states a tightening of voting procedures and voting identification requirements, especially from Republicans who believe there's enough fraud to warrant more restraint on that.
Camisa, of course, you have not only, of course, observed or monitored, but you have also, in fact, participated perhaps in some elections on the continent.
Definitely.
Do you know of any countries on the continent where they do have a system of early voting or even, in fact, vote absentee, balloting, and all that kind of stuff?
I don't have any example of that. And I believe the reason for that is, again, going back to the issue of electoral integrity. I think that in any of the countries, of the sub-Saharan countries that I've worked on, if you instituted early voting system or absentee ballots, then the doubt over the integrity of the election results will be definitely put into question. So no, I haven't seen that in any sub-Saharan African countries, and for a good reason. I think it's better this way for now.
But without early voting and perhaps mail voting and what have you, to what extent, in fact, have those elections that you have been part of or you have observed actually had integrity? To what extent have they, in fact, been
elections.
Credible elections?
Yes. So in some instances, of course, there are doubts about the election results. But for example, let's take the Nigerian presidential elections of last year. I think that the Electoral Commission did a very good job at informing citizens about the steps that they were taking in order to make sure that the elections were transparent and that their ballots were being kept and that they were being counted properly. I think that also the role of civil society organizations also played a huge role. And I think in most countries I've worked in sub-Saharan Africa, where the elections went well, civil society organizations have played a huge role in informing citizens, in letting them know where and when to vote and how to vote on the technical aspect of voting. And that has ensured that everybody was just working for the elections to be perceived as transparent. Because in sub-Saharan Africa, really the issue, the main issue is the perception of transparency or not.
Talking about Nigeria, of course, that was a landmark election, given that they got independence in October back in 1960.
Yes.
They had, in fact, never had a credible election.
Yes. That was the first one.
What about the international pressure that was brought about to bear, including the United States of America?
Definitely. And I'm going to go back to the role of civil society organizations. These days, it's getting harder and harder to rig elections, even in Africa, because you have journalists at polling stations who are compiling the results. All you have to do is sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and put down the numbers and count them. You have exit polling going on. You have journalists there. You have civil society organizations. You have international observers. You have members of the Electoral Commission. You have members of political parties that are within the polling stations. So it's kind of difficult to rig on election day. However, I would say that during the voter registration period, that's where people are a little worried, because it's easy to just add some fake people that don't really exist or make the dead vote.
You still have countries, of course, where election results can be tampered with by using the method of creative accounting.
Creative accounting?
Yes.
What do you call creative
accounting?
Coming
up with a result that does not at all reflect the will of the people.
Yes, and actually, but people, see, when that happens, people know that this is a fake result. And why is that? Because they have seen, they have observed, they've read reports by international observers that don't really support the election that either the Ministry of the Interior came up with or that the Electoral Commission came up with. And the example that pops into my mind is the Gabonese elections. I'm not going to say on air that the Gabonese elections were rigged. However, the results that came out were not the results that election observers actually saw on the ground.
We'll come to Gabon and some other examples, of course.
All right.
Now, we pause for a short break. We would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag US Elections. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111, U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question, keep your comment brief, and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come back to you, Jim. Talk to us about the significance of electoral college. Mm-hmm. What is an electoral college?
Right. Electoral college is the assembly of the states that actually the state-by-state vote will elect a president. So we have a popular vote in the United States, as many countries do. But what matters is accumulating state by state the electoral votes from those states to the magic number of 270 or more, which would make you president. How does a state get a certain number of electoral votes? It's simply reflected by the members of Congress that represent that state. Each state has two senators and at least one House member. You get a state like California that has 53 electoral votes because it's the largest state by population. Then you get a state like Wyoming, one of the smallest. It only has 3 electoral votes, again, for the 2 senators and the 1 House member in Wyoming. So you put those together to get to that. It's like building blocks to get to 270. And by the way, in the last few decades, for the most part, about 2/3 of the states tend to lean toward one party or the other. That leaves a group in the middle we call the battleground, swing states, the key states, that both parties tend to fight over in the closing months of a presidential campaign. And we're seeing some of the same ones pop up again this year.
So how do you explain and, in fact, convince, perhaps, and persuade to people from other countries where elections are simply won by popular vote?
It's our tradition. It's in our Constitution. The history is, to be frank with you, that the founders of the country were not wild about the idea of letting the people choose directly. There was some skepticism that they might make the right choice at times. For example, they might fear that a demagogue or someone might be able to come along mm-hmm. and whip up public support and get elected. So the safety valve here is the electors. The people from the state who, either by law or by tradition, are supposed to represent the popular vote in that state. Mm. Now, not all states require that by law, per se. Some that do offer some form of punishment for an elector who does not vote the way his state voted. But for the most part, with some exceptions, it's worked over time, and there's never been a case where electors have voted for someone else they shouldn't have to throw an election. It doesn't generally work that way. But even look, most Americans are not that versed in the Electoral College. Four times in our history, though, the popular vote has gone to one candidate, but the other candidate has won the electoral vote and the presidency.
Walk us back to 2000, Florida, where, of course, you have then Vice President Al Gore coming on top in terms of popular vote, but of course, not winning 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
That's right.
And how did the people react? How did they receive it, really?
Well, there was a lot of hard feelings. I covered that down in Tallahassee, the state capital. The weeks of recounts, court actions, finally culminating in the Supreme Court deciding to stop any more vote recounts, which effectively froze the total in George W. Bush's favor, and that made him president of the United States. But again, it reinforces the idea of the state-by-state role in the elections. This stemmed from the case in Florida. Mm-hmm. The federal government did not all of a sudden swoop in and get involved mm-hmm. and send troops down there or take over the recount. It was all done through the state of Florida. Only when there was a suit filed, a disagreement legally occurred that had to go to the Supreme Court, that's where the final decision was made. So, and did Americans accept it? They did. There were hard feelings, especially among Democrats. But the fact is, based on 538 vote swing in Florida, George W. Bush became president of the United States.
In fact, it was not the entire state. It was a county, if I remember correctly.
Well, that's the total statewide where final vote total was in Bush's favor. But out of millions and millions cast, can you imagine? A lot of Americans would prefer not to go through that again. One more thing about the polling, though. This is important. Having covered some elections in Kenya, a little bit of politics in Zimbabwe in the 80s, Americans generally have a lot of faith when they go to their polling location that all is going to be right. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of fears that people are stuffing the ballot box, mm-hmm. That a lot of people who shouldn't be voting are voting. I mean, some people have some concerns on a small scale. But for the most part, I think, and this is what I noticed was a difference in some of the African nations that I can remember people lining up for the parliamentary elections in Kenya. And I think there was some trepidation there in terms of running of the polling place, mm-hmm. the party involvement, and so forth. So it is a little different in the U.S. in that sense, that people generally have had confidence that the vote total will go as it should.
Well, what about back in 1960? And we're talking about the city of Chicago, where you had Mayor Joseph Dede, who is said, in fact, in some way to probably have actually helped JFK, the Democratic candidate.
Richard J. Daley. Yes, look, our history is replete with there have been voting irregularities. I think it's much harder today with the advance of technology and more stringent observers by Congress and others to keep watch, and in the states, safeguards to make sure people do not, circumvent the law. But certainly in 1960, there were some situations both in Texas and Illinois Democratic allies on behalf of John Kennedy. Things happened. And you know, the other thing here is Richard Nixon decided not to challenge it.
Very interesting.
He could have, but he did not. And that goes back to this tradition in our society where, for the most part, there's been gracious losing on the part of the candidate who did not win the White House.
What about in situations where neither of the candidates gets the magic number?
Well, it's possible to, the way the Electoral College works and the various state totals, you could get a 269 to 269 tie in the Electoral College. Now, at that point, under the constitutional rules, under the Constitution, the House of Representatives would decide, would vote for president. How would they do that? Each state would have one vote, each state delegation. Mm-hmm. So whichever party controlled the state delegation in Congress, of course, would have the upper hand. In this case, it probably would be the Republicans at this point because they have a majority in Congress and have more state majorities than Democrats.
Has that ever happened?
Well, early on it did in 1800, 1824. Congress did make choices because the public balloting was unsettled and was not they were not able to pick a winner. So it has happened in our history, but that was a long time ago. Americans, that would be an alien concept today, I can tell you, especially given our partisan politicized situation here.
Kamisa, what about you? We do have, of course, situations on the continent where some elections are won on a simple majority, like it happened in Gabon, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
But in a lot of other countries, you are talking about 50 plus one vote.
Yes.
Which seems to be better, really, when you talk to people on the continent.
Definitely. I think it is easier to for a presidential candidate who is an incumbent and who has access to state resources to win the elections in a one-round presidential system. Usually they strive on the opposition being totally divided and they just win. It just makes it easier. In the 50 plus one context, you have usually multiple presidential candidates. You can go as high as 20 plus.
Mm-hmm.
And then the candidates who have the most votes go in a second round system. And then, yes, the one that has 50 plus one gets elected. I think it's better because during the between the first and the second round, citizens have to rally between behind one or the other candidate.
Mm.
And it almost always feels like the result is more democratic in the 50 plus one system.
50 plus one system, but there are some very exceptional cases. For example, I'm talking about Chad,
yes.
Idris Deby,
yes.
Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, and we're talking about Zambia more recently, where people complain, frankly, that those are places, obviously, where you have that system of 50 plus one vote, but because of the manner in which those countries are governed,
yes.
The incumbent makes sure that there is no second round.
There is an African president who said in the 1990s that if you organize elections,
mm-hmm.
if you are the organizer of the elections,
mm-hmm.
you should not lose them. So I guess these countries do confirm that. Presidents like Idris Deby, who've been in power for 20 plus years, don't seem to want to leave power. So yes, they use the state apparatus, they use state resources to make sure that they win the elections.
If in fact the man you are talking about is a former Senegalese president, Abdi Wad,
yes.
Unfortunately, I have to say, ironically,
yes.
He did lose an election
when
he was an incumbent.
Yes, and he did
congratulate
Macky Sall. Yes.
Interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Diarro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Obviously, you mentioned Senegal, and you're just going to see the big smile in my face. And Abdoulaye Wade did show a lot of maturity then when he lost the elections and did call the person who won and congratulated that person. So that was a great example of democracy in West Africa. Well, this is the final stretch in the U.S. presidential campaign this time next week. Hopefully, we'll know who will lead the country for the next 4 years. Well, still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. Stay tuned.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart. Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Did you think that this day will ever come? Well, as mentioned earlier, the U.S. presidential election is on November 8th, and the battle for the White House is attracting global attention due to the rhetoric-filled race between Republican businessman Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton, the former U.S. Secretary of State. Throughout the campaign, Trump has claimed that the election process is rigged, and many political observers say that Trump's contentions are eroding voter confidence in the American election process. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what do you think about the American election process and why? Well, starting off the conversation is Ernest Mutale from Lusaka in Zambia with our letter of the week. Ernest Mutale in Lusaka, Zambia writes, well, a bit disappointing. American elections are supposed to be a good example for smaller democracies in the world. This one has not lived up to that. Not so issue-based. Well, that was Ernest Mutale in Lusaka, Zambia. And before we move on to more of your comments, I'd like to thank you all for using all our social media platforms to communicate with us. And I apologize in advance if I don't get to your reaction, because we simply have too many. Well, another reminder that we are tweeting live today, just use the hashtag US election. And if you haven't yet, do follow us at VOA Shaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Isaiah Sambo, who tweets about this year's election process by saying, not a proper time for the FBI interference. Advise American discussing public issues instead of discussing personal issues. Well, now to a comment from a Facebook fan, Niapa Ruot Laber, I hope I got all that name in, who writes, is vote rigging possible in America during the early voting period? Some people say they voted for candidate X, but the reply was, thank you for voting for candidate Y. Well, Shaka, Jim, and Kamisa, your thoughts on these comments?
Very interesting. Jim, your reaction?
Well, the last point, I did see a story that there may have been some malfunctioning machines in some precincts where people were complaining that they thought their vote was being tabulated wrongly. But for the most part, the early voting period is the same as the regular, and that there are very few complaints about any problems per se. More Americans are voting earlier every year, maybe up to 40% this year will actually vote early.
The latest figure so far? The last time I heard was about 25 million?
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, we're looking at an election that'll go 120, 130 million total. So it's still a fraction of the overall vote. The other issues brought up by some of the viewers, though, were interesting about the election has been focused not on issues, but basically on the personalities. I'm doing a lot of reporting on this the last week or so. And in a way, in one sense, you can look at it as a battle between temperament on one side and trustworthiness on the other. And when I say temperament, I'm primarily referring to Mr. Trump. The polls consistently show that people do not think he has the temperament to be president.
And trust?
Trust is more related to Hillary Clinton, and the reintroduction of the email issue has reinforced that for some people there may be some question about character, about trustworthiness. So as voters are going to the polls and will go on November 8th, these are a couple of the questions that are going to weigh in their minds.
Very interesting. Mariama, any more reaction from the social media world?
Absolutely. We'll go to another comment from Enoch Noel, another comment from Facebook. He's writing from Waterloo in Canada. He says, this American election campaign has been immature. It's supposed to be a good example for the world's other countries to follow. Instead, the candidates have demonstrated a total lack of respect for each other and the voters. Let's go to another one, another post from Kiwanuka Philip from Makerere in Uganda, who writes, I have not been impressed with the U.S. election this time around. Instead of the candidates focusing on the issues affecting the American people, they have focused more on personalities and partisan politics. This has been very disturbing. Well, that's coming from Uganda and Canada. Once again, I'm sure you just touched on that, but this is what they are writing about. Your thoughts on these ones.
Kamisa, your reaction, please.
Well, it will be my first time voting as an American citizen. And I've chosen to wait until November 8th to do it because it's symbolic. It's the election day. It's the day we will know who the next president of the United States will be. I think that the most of the comments that I've seen are all about the elections being disappointing. I think that we should also give credit to American democracy, because I don't know of many countries where you can have two presidential candidates that can basically say whatever they want, but also get backlash from voters about their temperament, about how they behave on TV, about how I'm going to use a word that one of the presidential candidates used, about how nasty you can become on TV. It just doesn't fly in the US, you know? So there is a lot of scrutiny by voters on how presidential candidates behave. And to make also the contrast with African elections, what I really like about the US presidential election system is the presidential debates. I don't know of many African countries that have actually held presidential debates. This is very unique to the United States. There are three of them.
There are some countries that have had, including my own country of Uganda.
Yep.
And I happen to have been, in fact, invited to be one of
the moderators
of the debate. But guess what? I ended up being told by the organizers that the president, who happened to be a presidential candidate in the same race, did not feel comfortable receiving questions from Shaka Sari, Voice of America.
All right. All right. Well, I think presidential debates are definitely a good way for voters to just decide on who they want to be their next president. I thought, for example, that Madame Clinton gave a very good role model to other women around the world.
So
she was being attacked.
So she wins your vote, eh? You're going to vote for her?
I like her a lot.
I see.
Let me put it this way.
Good for her. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you, everyone, for responding to our audience. And again, I'm sorry we couldn't go through all your comments. I've been getting messages about that. Hopefully, we'll get to them next week and as our U.S. election coverage continues. But that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Another reminder that we are streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Well, now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the historic U.S. presidential election and how the results could change the political landscape in the United States. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to our discussion on the U.S. presidential electoral process. Our distinguished guest, Kamisa Kamara, Senior Program Officer, National Endowment for Democracy, based here in Washington, D.C., and my colleague, Jim Malone, VOA's Senior Political Analyst. You are so many things at the same time, Jim. In any case, frankly, I have to say again that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Pleasure.
You're most welcome. You know, Jim, there was a man in the 1980s who earned the title of being Mr. the Great Communicator. That was Ronald Reagan. And part of it, frankly, was because he exploited his skills from Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a man in the race who was a star, a superstar, mm-hmm. of a reality television
That's
program
right.
called The Apprentice. What happened? I mean, you had Reagan disarming, Mr. Mondale, for example, talking about how he did not want to exploit his youth and political inexperience. Mm-hmm. And that was the end of the debate. So what happens to the man who was dismissing everybody on Apprentice?
Well, you know, this goes to a larger point I wanted to make based on some of the listener questions or the viewer points about why is the focus on Clinton and Trump, not issues. Clinton is well known. People have strong opinions generally one way or the other.
Right.
Trump is new on the political scene in a sense, but as you point out, he comes from reality television. It's probably a fitting model, wouldn't you say, for the social media age mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. Where politics is being infused with this rapid reaction, ADD, in other words, very little attention. You know, people will lose their train of thought after a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he has been able to rally supporters largely through his skills and through the use of television. Donald Trump made his way through the Republican nomination field through the debates. That's how he stood out.
Mm-hmm.
And by the rhetoric he used, people really were drawn to him who want to an America that harkens back to what they remembered and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the interesting point, though, because we talked about the debates. And the head-to-head debates between Clinton and Trump, since that first debate, there were three, Clinton only went up in the polls. So the three debates, in that sense, in that period, were critical. They have often shown to be fairly important in our history.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, I think it did give the voters a chance to do a head-to-head comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And Clinton seemed to come out of that in better shape. She had a lead coming out of that. Now, of course, the latest developments in the last week or so, we have a tighter race now heading into November 8th.
Now, of course, Trump presents himself as a candidate of change.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some have gone to the extent of talking about a trajectory change because he is an outsider.
Yes.
He's never held, you know, elective office, never been really in Washington. Except that he happens to be a man who knows how to be deep-pocketed man, how to make money. Any particular reason why his message is not resonating, is not drawing traction? Because a lot of other people also look at Mrs. Clinton as more of the same.
I think when he's at his strongest, and when he's talking about bringing change and talking about being an outsider and not being controlled by moneyed interests, Trump has been effective
mm-hmm.
because here's the historical precedent in our country. After two presidential terms with one person, there's generally a desire for change. In fact, only once since the Second World War has the party held the presidency three you know, elections in a row. That was when George H.W. Bush succeeded Ronald Reagan in 1988.
True. Very true.
So there's generally a push for change. Frankly, a lot of the experts before this year gave Republicans an advantage. They thought they would have the edge, particularly with Mrs. Clinton, who is well known, as I said before, has a lot of experience in government. But if people are looking for change, she's probably not an agent of change that they want. The issue, as we know, is who is Donald Trump and what kind of candidacy has he run? What kind of person has he come across to the voters? And with all the controversies we've seen, that at times has undermined that message of change. So that's the internal struggle there. Some voters are coming to the conclusion they want change so much they are willing to take a flawed vessel. And if Trump is able to emerge victorious, that will be, I think, one of the underlying lines that I know he's got baggage. I don't like everything he says, but I'm going to vote for him anyway because I just don't want more of the same. I have met those voters in Iowa, New Hampshire, at the conventions. Mm-hmm. Are they enough, though, to overcome all the controversies, the Muslim ban, the various comments about various ethnic groups that Trump has made over time, which have alienated people, and also just some of the personal attacks, a former Miss Universe, the Khan family, parents of an American hero. Mm. So these are things that all the voters are going to be wrestling with now. But as we see, it does look like it's getting a little closer, not just nationally, but in some of these key states that will determine the outcome.
State. Kamisa, what about the issue of the changing demographics and, of course, the role of social media? To what extent are these two impacting this year's race?
So we were just talking about the flaws of the candidates, and the flaws are magnified by social media. Mm-hmm. One thing that I haven't heard here is that, yes, Americans might be looking for change, but Hillary Clinton is a woman. Mm-hmm. Have we ever had a woman candidate who's gone as far as Hillary Clinton?
No, but she's from the establishment.
She is, but she's a woman. And the first thing I see when I look at the presidential debate, I see Mr. Trump, I see Hillary Clinton, the first thing I see is a woman. This is different.
You're right, but there are women who tell me, yes, it is a woman. We need a woman to be our next president. But they say, this cannot be Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, for some strange reason, does not draw the attraction. I don't know why.
I don't know why either, but I'm thinking about the future, and I just wonder when will be the next time the U.S. will have a woman candidate, a presidential candidate who will go as far as Hillary Clinton.
One thing we've noticed in the and when I was following them in the primaries, women, more mature women, who recall firsthand the struggles of women to achieve rights and status in society over the last 30 years, 40 years, they tend to see Clinton as a role model, and they tend to appreciate the significance of a woman rising to high office. Mm-hmm. It was interesting that a number of younger women, it just didn't seem to strike the same chord. I don't know if it's removed from the time of where all those early achievements were made, but it seems to have been a little bit of a struggle for the Clinton campaign to mobilize a lot of those younger women, and many of them were very excited by Barack Obama. And the other issue here is African American voters. Mm-hmm. Some of the early indications are in some of the key states, it's their support is off a bit. They're not turning out as strong in numbers as they did 4 and 8 years ago for Mr. Obama.
Some, of course, have suggested that she frankly does not come through as being authentic.
That is true.
That she comes to be as Hillary Rodham Clinton, a lady who, in fact, started thinking about becoming president of the United States, or perhaps to make history, really, from the time she was very young, back in college.
You know, I got curious about her and actually read her biographies, and I'm putting it in plural. I was actually amazed by her, and I did admire her, because she didn't get where she is by just being Hillary Clinton. She really struggled.
She worked very hard for it.
She worked really, really, really hard for it, and this is the kind of role model that I think women need these days.
What about the issue of finance? Of course, you can't be president in this country without perhaps breaking records in terms of fundraising.
Fundraising, yeah.
What about money? Money makes a huge difference in this country, even though, of course, you could have all the money and still not have the delegates.
I think money definitely plays a huge role, and that makes it difficult for a women candidate to have the education, the experience, the political clout, and the money all together in one person. That's why I like her.
What about the media? To what extent is the media impartial here?
Well, there's always a question about that. That's going to be one of those judgments that's in the eye of the beholder of the voter. And one thing we've known through the internet, through social media, the media filtration now is often ideological. People will get their news from one location where they tend to agree with them ideologically. Conservatives, Fox News, liberals, it might be a station like MSNBC here in the United States. So we're breaking that. You'd think with the age of the internet that people would be open to more information. Mm. In some ways, it puts you into silos where you want to hear the echo chamber. And, you know, this contributes to this political polarization, which is going to continue in this country no matter who wins.
Interesting. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Tafa from Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Tafa, are you there? Tafa? What about Martin from Uganda? I'm afraid it looks like we can't get to these two phone callers. Let me come back. What about that, the issue of finance? How does that play in Africa, in some of the elections that you have observed?
It does play a huge role in Africa. And what you'll see is that the state resources are used to campaign.
State resources.
State resources.
So basically, opposition candidates in some African countries, if not most of them, are in fact running or competing against the state.
They are competing against the state, but you will see that the most successful ones have either held a government position in the past, or they are from a political party that gets most of its funding from the state. Mm-hmm. So it's all about how much the state gives me. Some definitely are rich and they can run on their own, for example.
Maybe like Burkina Faso, no, like Benin.
Benin, or I'm thinking the DRC, even though the elections are not going to happen in a few years. But for example, Moise Katumbi, who wants to become a presidential candidate, is
governor
rich.
Governor of Katanga.
He has a lot of money, so
he can
run for president without having access to state resources.
But what about this situation where some have argued that when you go to most African countries, really, there is no separation between the ruling party and the state, but in fact the two are fused in one.
Oh, I totally agree with that vision.
So if in fact that happens to be true, then how do you in fact pretend to be conducting an election that involves several parties?
That's the big question.
Is there true meritocratism on the African continent, or is it in fact a multi-party system based on a one-party state template?
That's a difficult question. So you will see, again, incumbent presidents running and winning 100% of the time, almost. In some cases, that hasn't been the case.
They control the electoral commission?
They control the electoral commission.
The institutions of violence?
Yes.
The police? The military, the intelligence, the security forces, they control the treasury.
All of that.
They control even, of course, the administrative structures of the state.
Of the state.
Which become, in fact, campaign agents.
At the national and at the local level. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it definitely makes it difficult for any opposition to rise up against an incumbent.
And of course, they control and influence the media, whatever media is there.
Definitely. So there are exceptions, obviously, but we were talking about
Nigeria, for example.
For example,
yes. Ghana.
South Africa.
Yeah.
So there are definitely exceptions. But for example, the most recent elections that I think about all the time are the Gabonese elections. We have had one family in power for close to 50 years, the son of Omar
Bongo-Relly.
Yes.
Omar Bongo, when he wants to decide to be Muslim, or Bernard Bongo, when he wants to be close to Paris.
Exactly. So Ali ran again, and it was almost obvious that he was going to win the elections, whether the citizen said, yes, we want you again, or we don't.
Yes.
And that's probably because a combination of the fact that the electoral system is a one-round system.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a combination of the fact that he has in his pocket the entire country.
But, Kamisa, what difference would it in fact have made if in fact the major opposition candidate, Jean Ping, mm-hmm, who obviously used to be very, very close to Mr. Bongo,
who even
who
went
also
on TV,
happens to have children, in fact,
yes,
two children,
yes,
with Ali's sister.
Yes, and he even went on TV to say, I have worked with Omar Bongo to rig the election. This is how we did it. So, yeah.
So you could rig any other time, but certainly not rig me out, because I know that you are rigging all the time.
But these are definitely exceptions. I mean, I can only think about Togo, which is another country where you've had one family ruling.
Yeah, Simba Yadema, of course, a man who, at least from what I have read in my research, who actually shot and killed the founding president, Olympio, running for cover. In fact, he was trying to go to the American embassy.
True.
1963.
So Togo is a small country, but a country that has been ruled by the same family for close to 50 years.
Very interesting.
And you have the exact same situation. One round electoral system, divided opposition, same family, winning.
Jim, when we talk about an election being too close to call, what exactly do we mean?
Well, nationally, the polls would be close. We're starting to see more of that now with the Clinton-Trump race. And then if you look, again, back to this electoral college notion, mm-hmm, you look at the individual states, mm-hmm, and you focus on key states that either go one way or the other generally. Ohio, Florida, mm-hmm, now North Carolina, Nevada,
Colorado,
Iowa, New Hampshire. There's, mm-hmm, there's about a dozen or so we always look at, Pennsylvania. If they're teetering one way or the other, that's going to give that candidate an advantage. If they're all bunched close and too close to call, then you know you may be in for a long night, election night.
What about a toss-up? What is a toss-up?
A toss-up, again, is simply, particularly in polling parlance, where the candidates are within 1 or 2 points, what they call the margin of error. Because there's always a margin of error in polling. It's not exact science.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's 3 or 4 points margin of error, if it's a 2-point lead, you know it's within the margin of error, and therefore you can call it a toss-up. But here's the thing about polls. Don't look at one individual poll. Look at a series, look at a trend, look at an aggregate, because
right,
that gives you the better idea.
So when you talk about toss-up, how different is it from what is called battleground state?
Well, the battleground state is a state where both campaigns target it. They put a lot of money in there. They're running television advertisements. And the candidates are coming there. These candidates know a lot about Ohio and Florida and
Florida,
North Carolina.
Florida.
Because they're there every week. And they keep coming back to the same places.
Mrs. Clinton has been to Florida, for example, the last time I checked, 5 times.
Right. Wow. And it's not just to try to win over undecided voters. It's to get your people out to the polls. And this is where now President Obama is actively urging African Americans to get out and vote, because they're seeing a lag.
Apparently, they don't seem to be very enthusiastic in as far as Mrs. Clinton is concerned, at least in Florida.
Not as enthusiastic as when Barack Obama was the candidate, and there's some understandability.
But
to
what
that.
About the ground game? Does she have the same type of ground game as Barack
Obama?
Well,
she's seen as having a better one than Donald Trump. Trump has none himself with his campaign, just the RNC would help him out.
Unfortunately, Jim, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our two distinguished guests, Kamisa Kamara, Senior Program Officer, National Endowment for Democracy, and my colleague Jim Malone, VOA's Senior Political Analyst. Thanks to affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning's Daybreak Africa with James Debate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, America. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.